Starting in Genesis chapter 13. Genesis chapter 13. I invite you to open your Bibles there and study along with us. Certainly glad those that are visiting with us are here. I invite you to come back anytime that you can. Worship with us. Genesis 13 is where we're going to be starting at. As you turn in there, just ask a question: how nice it would be if there was just a book on the Bible solely and completely dedicated to raising children. How nice would that be? We had the chronology of David as a child. What did Jesse do in that house? We had the chronology of Zacharias and Elizabeth as they raised John the Baptist. What did they do? Things like curfews and just anything. All those questions that we might ask. Wouldn't it be nice? Well, although we don't have a comprehensive book outlined just for that, but there is a lot the Bible says about raising children. There is much to consider about it. There are a lot of examples about it. And I want you to look today at two of those examples as we kind of look together with the families of Noah and the families of Lot. Not specifically the leaders themselves, but the children, the differences in those children. And we're going to look at those just a little bit. We hear and find the record of Noah and his family, basically from the latter part of Genesis 5 up through the end of chapter 10. We meet Lot early on, but we don't really get to have much detail with him and his family until chapter 19. Almost the whole of chapter 19, we can find out more about him and his family. Before we get into any specifics, just to look at one couple things. First of all, both of these families being raised in evil surroundings. It was said in the days of Noah that the people's mind was on evil continually. We like to talk about our culture, but evil continually. Imagine that. A culture so evil that, by the way, God destroyed it with water. That's where Noah is raising his family. Lot raising his family in a city so evil, God destroyed it, basically from the face of the earth. And that's where these people are raising children. So the points are, righteous people can find themselves in unrighteous places, but raising our children are still our responsibility. So we're going to look at some of the things they did this morning. Lived during times of evil things. Both families led by righteous men. We'll look at the leaders of them in just a moment. One more comparison. Both offered protection from catastrophes. A flood is coming. God offered protection if Noah would be faithful. Destruction was coming. God sent angels to let Lot know about that. To save him and his family from coming destruction. Here are some comparisons before we even get in to the meat. We've got times that are hard. And we've got men trying to lead families when times were hard. And we've got destruction imminent. And we've got children right in the middle of that. And when we look at these things that are similar, their children were different. So we want to look at some of the things that Noah's children behaved differently than Lot's children did. It wasn't the fatherhead. It wasn't the head of the house that was, but their children were completely different. What were some things we can learn from that? Well, let's start with this first application. And that is the fact that our decisions have impacts and they can be huge. Turn to Genesis 13. So we're first introduced to Lot, basically. Not as being Lot himself, but as being Noah's nephew. Or not Noah's, but Abraham's. That's kind of where we first meet him in chapter 13. You remember what happened? God has blessed them. And they have grown so much, their stocks have gotten so big, that there's really not room. And Lot's people and Abraham's people, they begin to fight about the land, who's going to get the better crops and the better grazing. And you remember in verse 8, Abraham got Lot together and said, this is not going to happen. We're family. And we are not going to fight like this. We're going to fix this. And he took Lot up and basically put him in a place where they could see everything. He says, here's what we're going to do. You take the pick. You go one way, I'll go the other. But we're not going to fight. And our people are not going to fight. You pick one way, I go the other. And that way we will both have plenty of what we need. Look in verse 10. Lot lifted up his eyes and he beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord had destroyed. But he looks out and all he sees is green. And all he sees is sparkling water from streams and creeks. Verse 11, Lot shows him the plain of Jordan, and he journeyed east. Now, I want you to picture this. I want you to picture me and you are on a mountainside, and we're just looking at the landscape. Have you ever, we just did this yesterday, driving through a neighborhood, and which of these houses would you like best? Have you ever played that game? We played all the time. I like this one. Well, I like this one. You ever done that? Now picture yourself on a mountain and you're looking over the... Which side do you like better? He picked the side that most of us probably would have picked. The greenest, most fertile, most well-watered. You're driving through the neighborhood, which of these houses do you like? I like that one because of the porch. And I like this. We do that. Lot did that. And if all we're talking about is physical days, he made a good choice. He made a CEO choice. He made a business decision. And the business decision was good. We can see that, right? Verse 11, he chose him to plant a Jordan and he journeyed east. They separated themselves. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan. Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, the green, the watered cities of the plain. He pitched his tent as far as Sodom, but the men of Sodom were wicked, and they sinned before the Lord exceedingly. You see, we're not just making a CEO decision. Lot made a decision, and purely business, good choice. Purely physical, good choice. If the decision is about grass and pastures and fat cows, he made a good choice. But when you keep reading, there were some spiritual ramifications, and he didn't consider it at all. Can you put yourself back on the mountainside now, and you're looking over all that stuff? Apparently not 1 second of Lot's decision was ever made on, I wonder what kind of cities are in that direction. I wonder what kind of morals are in that direction. The whole decision was based on physical. On the surface, it's a good choice. But now we've got these spiritual applications and spiritual realities. You might want to mark your place in Genesis. It's an easy book to find. You might not need to, but we're coming right back to it. But look at 2 Peter chapter 2. Let's real quickly, before we go any farther, let's get something that the Bible settles for us about Lot himself. We are today studying about their families. But before we do that, let's talk about the leader of this family. 2 Peter chapter 2. And if you can't imagine now, years have passed since that decision was made. What is going through Lot's mind? He's now living in a place that Moses, by inspiration, told us that where sinners lived exceedingly. In verse 7, we get an idea of what's going on in his mind. Genesis doesn't tell us. Peter, by inspiration, does thousands of years later. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 7. Speaking of God's delivering of Lot. It says, he delivered righteous Lot. He rescued him, the newer translations say. He rescued righteous Lot, just Lot, who was distressed sorely with the lascivious lifestyle of the wicked. And then in parentheses, it says, this righteous man dwelled among them, seeing them, hearing them, tormenting his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. He hated living there. He hated what he saw every day that he walked out of his door. He hated what he heard. It's just walking down the streets. It says it tormented him. Lot couldn't stand it. His children, on the other hand, as we turn back to Genesis, his children didn't feel like that. Lot was a righteous man who made a physical choice. He's now got him in a spot, and he feels now as if he's in over his head. His children, apparently they were raised there. They grew up hearing this stuff, seeing this stuff, and apparently they didn't have much problem with it at all. So turn back to Genesis 19, and let's look at some of the impacts of this decision. Lot was disgusted by this culture. living daily in this midst of sin, it says it tormented him. But he kept his family there. So I'm asking the question, was that because of the business move? Even as he's tormented daily, he doesn't leave. Why? Me and you know why. And we'll talk more about that in just a little bit. Me and you may be reliving this thing. Before we talk about that, let's look at some of the impacts. Look in verses 14 and 15. Chapter 19, I'm sorry. I've got you. I didn't tell you where to go. Genesis 19. Now we're looking at Lot's family. And we're going to start in verse 14. He has gotten daughters now who has married people of Sodom and Gomorrah. They have married into those families. They have entrenched themselves there. Married men from there, and now that's where they live. That's home to them. Verse 14. After the angels had come, told Lot what was coming and what was about to happen. Lot, verse 14, went out. Remember that phrase? He went out. He leaves his house to go to his family's house, daughter's house. He went out and he spoke to his sons-in-laws who had married his daughters. They don't live with him. He went out to their house. He went out to talk to the sons-in-laws who had married his daughters. And he said, get up. Get out of this place. The Lord will destroy this city. But it seemed as one to be mocked by his son-in-laws. Can you picture that? Angels have told Lot what's about to happen. Lot has families there. He has daughters there. He has son-in-laws there. And he goes to tell them, here's what's going to happen. We got to leave. And we got to leave now. And they laughed at him. Put him to scorn. Mocked him, it says. Wouldn't leave with him. Verse 15. When the morning arose, the angels hastened Lot and said, arise, take your wife and your two daughters that are here. So this is not talking about the other ones. There were two unmarried daughters. We'll find out in just a moment. These two daughters were not married. They were still maidens. So can you picture what's going on? There are married daughters that he had to go out to talk with. There are two unmarried still living with him. We read verse 14 and 15 just to emphasize. We got two sets of groups here. Plural daughters that are gone, married off. They didn't listen. The two that went with him were still in the house with him. They were unmarried. We'll find out in a moment. He's got daughters in this city. Look in verse 26. Lot was vexed, tormented, but he has daughters there who don't have near the animosity and the hurt of what's going on. In verse 26, his wife got wrapped up in this too. You know what Jesus had warned concerning the very thing. Verse 26, his wife as they had left. You know the story. I'm not going to give all the details behind it. As they left, they were told not to look back, but verse 26, his wife did look back behind and became a pillar of salt. I don't speak Hebrew, nor do I speak Greek, nor do I speak Russian. But that word looking back in verse 26, when you study the Hebrew, so I'm telling you this, you go check it out to make sure it's right. That has the idea of looking back longingly. It was a Hebrew word that meant an intense look. Think about that. To look back with longingness. To look back with intentness. He's got daughters that won't leave. He's got daughters that stayed. He has a wife with some longing feelings toward it. She lost her life that day too. Look in verse 30. Do you remember the two that we talked about that were maidens that had not been married? It affected their morals too. Do you remember when they got out of the city in verse 30? Lot went up from Zoar. He dwelt on the mountain, and his two daughters were with him. These were the unmarried ones. These were the maiden daughters. He feared to dwell in Zoar. He dwelt in a cave, him and his two daughters. The firstborn said, our father's old. There's not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of the earth. And so we're not ever going to get married. And if we let dad get too much older, we'll never be able to have children. So they get him drunk that night, both of them. And in separate occasions, both of them become pregnant by their dad. what are we seeing? We're seeing people whose morals were impacted by where daddy took them. Daddy made a business decision, and it was a good business decision. Grass was green, water everywhere, made a good living. He had some daughters who married into it. They wouldn't even leave. He had some daughters who, by living at home, still under the roof, did what they were told to do. They left, but their morals were impacted. Their morals were affected. One more. We need to look about concerning impacts that this decision made. When the fire and the brimstone fell, and Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed, how much was left over? There wasn't anything left of those cities. The point is, Lot making that business decision, right? When it's all said and done, he has nothing but the clothes that was on his back. Everything, whatever was in his house, whatever was in his barns, whatever was in his storage piles, gone. Just like everything else in those cities. He ends up in a cave on the top of a mountain with nothing but what he had on his back. There are impacts to our decisions. And some of those decisions, the impacts just keep on coming. So now let's make some applications. His choice is being repeated by innumerable families. I threw the question out earlier. If Lot is vexed by this stuff, if his soul is tormented by what he's seeing and by what he's hearing, why did he keep his family there? Same reason many of us keep our families where we keep them, because the money's good and the retirement's good. And we're hearing things every day we ought not hear. We're seeing things. We're vexed, tormented by what? But we won't leave. Won't separate from it. And that's where he is. And that's the decision that he made. And it impacted the rest of his family. Even the ones that didn't die had their morals impact completely. Me and you make puppets about the jobs we take, about the places we live, about the places we will move to. Me and Carl know people, we can put names to this statement. They move their family chasing dollars. They move their family chasing raises and promotions. And they put themselves in places where the church was either weak or didn't even exist. Those are present day examples of looking for the pasture and the water and no concern made for spiritual things. I'll bet you know people who made the same decisions. Are we honest enough to admit that we may be the one who made that decision? And what are we going to do about it? What's the impact of our soul, our family's souls, if we don't do something about it? There are consequences with lasting effects. And if we've sold our soul to the company, change our name to Lot. These decisions impact more than us. That's the interesting thing. And not interesting thing, almost the sad thing. Lot is the one that made this choice. When you go back to Genesis 13, I don't see anything that gives me the idea that Lot and his whole family stand on that mountainside and they have a big powwow and said, we think we'll go this way. No, it was Abraham and Lot. Lot made the choice. And that choice led to a lot of death of people he loved. And it led to ruined morals of people he loved. Our choices impact others. And sometimes those choices are impacting people we love too. What if, let's play a game with this. What if Lot had made the spiritual choice instead of it all being based on the physical? What if he had put his family in a completely different setting? What if he had put himself in a completely different setting? Now for the choices you and I are going to face in the future, what about us? Can't go back and change lots. And the truth is, we can't go back and change some of the ones we may have made, but we can make better choices today. And we can make better choices tomorrow. And there may be some bad choices we're going to have to fix. But we're learning from one who's did it, one who has experienced it. And God recorded that for us. No, we don't have a book that called the book of child raising. But all throughout God's word, there are examples, positive and negative, of choices and decisions. And me and you can find ourselves in some very similar things. So let's look at another application. Impact of our decisions. They're huge. And they impact more than us, by the way. What about the impact of an active, trusting faith? Let's talk about Noah for just a moment. Turn back to Genesis 7. And as you're turning there, it's just going to save us some time, kind of remind us of what we already know. After God had come to him in that midst of that generation where it was said, they thought of evil continually. God came to Noah and told him what was going to happen, told him what he was going to build, told him how long it was going to be, how wide, how tall, how many windows, how many doors. He told him everything. And then put him to work. Genesis doesn't tell us how long he worked, but other passages, when you put the chronology together, it was right at the neighborhood of 120 years. Think about that. A boat being built by hand to meet those descriptions. 3 football fields, remember? Took a long time. Took 120 years right at it. And in that time period, as Noah's building, he's also what Peter referred to as a preacher of righteousness. That's in 2 Peter 2 as well. Peter was comparing Noah and Lot. We're making that same comparison today. Peter describes Noah by inspiration as a preacher of righteousness. It's interesting. He's not called a boat builder of righteousness. He's building a boat, preaching all along. And can you imagine all the opportunities he would have had as he gets work on this huge thing that you couldn't have hid? Wasn't intended for it to be hidden. And can you imagine the people walking by? What are you doing? Why are you doing it? What's up? And he begins to tell them what God had told him. He begins to tell them of the destruction that's coming. He preaches righteousness. And just like Lot's son-in-laws mocked him, can we even imagine the type of mocking that he would have endured? In a culture where evil was all that people thought about continually, can you imagine? Because he's preaching something that, to save us time, we could also turn back to Genesis 2. He's preaching something that's absolutely unimaginable to them. Not only can they not imagine a flood that he was describing, but even the fact of where it was coming from. Remember in Genesis 2, verses 5 and 6, it had not even rained that we have record of. He's talking about something they can't even, in their wildest dreams, imagine. Well, the truth is, in Noah's wildest dreams, he can't imagine this either. He's never seen it either. He's not acting on what he can imagine. He's acting on faith. He's acting on trust. My Lord said this, and here's what I will do. In constant action for that 100-year period, 100-plus years. Now, we tried to get into the head earlier of Lot's daughters. Now, completely flip that over. Now, imagine getting into the head of his 3 sons. Noah's 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. I want you to pretend. I want you to imagine he's your dad. Working like crazy every day. Doing something that doesn't appear to be very logical. Doesn't appear to be a CEO decision. Noah has basically postponed the other parts of his life. He's whatever he would have been. He's now a shipbuilder. He's now a preacher. Active constantly. And apparently it impacted his sons. Because in chapter 7, when the so-called impossible happened, in the 600th year of Noah, verse 11, second month, 17th day, the fountains of the great deep broke up. The window of heaven was opened. Rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. When this unimaginable thing that he's been talking about for 120 plus years or so, when it happens, his sons right there with him. Their wives right there with him. Noah's wife right there with him. And there's nothing to give any indication that she longingly looks back as she's about to walk through the door of the boat. A different family here You've got a different outcome here. And now that makes me wonder. It should make us wonder. What happened then with Lot's children? Because he was a righteous man, right? That's what Peter said. A just man. Turn back to chapter 19. There were some things about Lot's life that weren't very consistent. In Noah's family, we see the impact that a faithful, stable, grounded, active faith can have. In Lot's, we don't see that at all. He was described as righteous, but there were some inconsistencies that ought to open up our eyes. And that might not be strong enough. It ought to scare us. We may be righteous in many ways, but there may be some inconsistencies that stick out to those who love us, who see us and know us best. So go back to chapter 19 and let's look at Lot, because there were some things about his faith that was not as monumental as we can describe about Noah's. Look in verse 8, back in chapter 19. Again, I am under the impression that this is a familiar text, that we had not read the whole of chapter 19. But remember that God sent those angels to tell Lot about what was going to happen. Those angels came in the form of men. And when they came through the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, an evil city full of homosexuality and idolatry and immorality, they saw those two, what they considered to be strangers. And they wanted them. The men of that city was going to rape them. The men of that city was going to take them. And in verse 8, here's Lot's compromise, for lack of a better phrase. Verse 7, he says, I pray you don't do this. Don't do this wickedness. Leave those men alone. Stop banging on my door screaming for them. Behold, I have two daughters which have not known men. Remember I mentioned earlier, these were the two that was up on the mountain with him. These are not the ones that were married off. These were the two that still lived with him. I have two daughters that have not known men. Let me, I pray you, bring them out to you. Do unto them what's good in your own eyes. There's a bunch of daddies in this room. He offered his daughter to rapists. There are a bunch of wives in this room thinking about their husbands right now. Your husband offered the daughters to rapists. Look in verse 16. He is gone. He has been told what's going to happen. He has gone to try to get his daughters and son-in-laws, and that didn't work. It's now the day of the destruction. In verse 16, while he lingered, newer translations use hesitated. While he hesitated, the men, that's the angels that were sent, the men, the angels, laid hands on him and the hand of his wife and on the hands of his two daughters. They basically, those two angels, basically start grabbing and just start walking with him. I don't know what he's hesitating about. I don't know what's causing him to linger, but we know what those words mean. He's not in any hurry. This is the day of the destruction. And verse 16 plainly tells us. It doesn't tell us why there is a lingering, but it tells us that angels grabbed his hand and took him out. In verse 19, as he is now on the run, and if I understand it right, the destruction's already happening. They can hear it. It is occurring. And he doesn't think he's going to make it. God has already told him, if you leave, I'm going to protect you. Look in verse 19. He says, behold, if your servant has found grace in your sight, this is Lot basically talking to God on the run. If your servant has found grace in your sight, and you have magnified your mercy which you have showed unto me into saving my life, I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. Behold, there's a city near. It's a small city. Let me escape there. It's just a small one. Let my soul live there. As he's running, it's as if he's arguing and laying out this complaint to God. Let me go to the nearest city. I'm not going to make it to that mountain you wanted me to go to. Let me go over here. There's a closer place. I'm going to die if I don't. Peter calls Lot a righteous man. And he was tormented by what he saw. But there are some inconsistencies And when the family sees inconsistencies like that, it does impact them. We can all be stronger and we can all be better. That's what we're trying to do. That's what this is about. We can't turn to a book about family raising. We can turn to examples, good and bad. And we can make applications if we have the courage to make them. He's got these inconsistencies. Is it any wonder then that the family didn't follow his lead as strongly as Noah's did when that rain fell? And the scary thing is, there's this righteousness about him, but there's some hesitancy about it too. There was some righteousness about him, but there's this lingering thing going on. And that can affect us too. Innumerable people. We're trying to see ourselves. I'm going to give you one more. The application of constantly having to guard our character. Turn back to Genesis 9. We talked about Noah, a preacher of righteousness. One who set such an incredible example before his family that they were right there with him doing what seemed to be the ridiculous. Preparing for something that seemed to be unimaginable. And now after it's all said and done, now we're back to the first one, aren't we? The impact of decisions. When it's all said and done, another decision is made. Verse 20. This is after the flood, after the replenishing, after everything has gotten back to whatever state of normalcy. Verse 20 of chapter 9, Noah became a husbandman, became a vineyard, became a vine grower, became a planter. He planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine and was drunken and was uncovered within his tent. And you know the rest. We're back to number one. The impact of decisions. Noah's a righteous man who has worked hard to set a proper example. And he had his family. But now he makes another decision. And this decision has impacts. And it impacts the ones he loved. He had a son that didn't take this very seriously. And he did. Consequences. Verse 25, cursed is Canaan. Servant of servants he will be to his brothers. Consequences. Impacts. You've got Noah making this decision. We have Lot making decisions. Lot, you see, almost like a seesaw. Up and down with inconsistencies and hesitancies. Noah, this was it. We didn't see any weaknesses in Noah until now. But here's a decision that impacts family, impacts loved ones. The point is, you don't have to be on the seesaw for our decisions to make impacts. One bad decision. One decision that just sets things on a snowball down a hill. We need to open our eyes and take serious these things. Because we owe it to God and we owe it to our families to understand and make good choices with spiritual things being involved in those choices. Don't forget to include God in the choices that we make. We owe it to God and we owe it to our families to be active and trusting and set an example before others, especially those that love us the most. We owe it to God and we owe it to our families to get off the seesaw and to guard our character. Because one bad choice affected a nation. Not just a son, it affected the descendants of that son. It affected a nation. I'm not saying that's how serious ours would, but neither can we say that it wouldn't. Get your songbooks out. Can't turn to a book on child rearing, but we can turn to people who did it well. We can turn to people who didn't do it very well. And we can look at ourselves. And with honest eyes and honest hearts, we can see some things we need to be better at. And that's what the invitation's about. Will we get better? Sons, daughters, mothers, husbands, dads, all the different realms and relationships that we have. About to offer the invitation. We're talking about, we look at Lot's children. We looked at Noah's children. We're offering the invitation. You can become God's child. If by faith you'll do what he asks you to do, if you'll repent of your sins, be baptized to wash those sins away, you'll acknowledge and confess Christ as your Lord. Do that while we stand and sing the song.